A gruesome story leads off our newscast.
Milwaukee police found body parts in a Northside apartment, and now they wonder if they've uncovered some kind of death factory.
At least 30 people have been found dead at a hotel.
Police found parts of bodies, leading them to believe the man they arrested is a mass murderer.
C-O-Z-O.
Oh my God!
And welcome everybody to another episode of Lobotomized. I'm Kevin.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
Yeah, so what's up, guys? Hey, how you doing tonight?
Doing well.
Oh, I'm doing fantastic.
Nice.
Especially looking into this topic we were going to do.
Yeah, today. We're doing a lot better than a lot of the people we're going to be talking about today. So
yeah, we're kind of forming our own triangle right here too.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, it's a weird
isosceles. Ooh,
it is an isosceles triangle. Yes.
Bringing me back to geometry.
Yes. All right.
There's your dose of ninth grade geometry, folks.
Yeah, there you go. I doubt they even teach that shit anymore.
Dude, they totally do.
Do they? I don't know. I don't know the way the schools are getting and all this shit I'm hearing about this dumb shit they're teaching.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, so today we are talking about the Bermuda Triangle. So, of course, this is a extremely popular one. I mean, this is probably one of the OGs for me. Like, when I first started looking into fucked up shit, the Bermuda Triangle was one of the first things that came up.
This was, like, in my middle school, like, Mysteries of the World book, you know?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Sure, it was great. So, for the uninitiated, the Bermuda Triangle, also known as the Devil's Triangle, is a loosely defined region in the western part of the North Atlantic Ocean. It's famous in pop culture for the mysterious disappearances of ships and aircraft. So, the triangle itself is generally said to cover an area with vertices at Miami, Florida, Bermuda, and San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Which is huge.
Which is a huge triangle. Area. It's way bigger than the triangle that we're making right now.
Looking back into this, I forgot almost, you know, that it was that big. I just figured it was like more of a smaller area between islands. But I mean, Bermuda's way out in the middle of the freaking ocean. So
yeah. So basically, this creates a triangular zone of roughly 500,000 to 1.5 million square miles, depending on who's defining it, of course. But either one is ridiculously huge.
Yeah,
so, absolutely.
And it stretches across some of the busiest shipping lanes in the world. Now, there's all kinds of theories as to why all these things happen and everything. And Kyle, do you have some of those theories on this?
Yeah, I mean, all right. There's... What do you call it? The simple way of saying it is how the ocean can just kind of fart a methane bubble,
okay.
Which creates a like an air pocket or messes with the buoyancy of the water that could just sink a ship like a stone,
shit.
In a matter of seconds.
Really?
That's what I read. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. That just sounds like ridiculous.
It does. Yes.
Because, I mean, that's basically like isn't that how global warming is made, too? Like, all the cows are, like, out in the fields, and then, like, they all fart, and it, like, puts holes in the fucking ozone or some shit? Like, is that kind of how it works?
Some asshole's way of... I mean, yeah, that, I think, can affect the ozone, but come on. Like, it's not like a fucking 747.
Yeah.
It's just some cows, like, ripping ass in a field.
As cows do.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize this is how we were going to start the podcast.
Oh, talking about, like, cows farting and shit. Yeah. And oceans, they can apparently do that, but they, like, somehow, it's a death bubble, and it just sinks anything it touches. Okay. All right. So
somehow they say that could affect the airplanes too. So
yeah, I was gonna say
like the gas goes up into the air and then it can affect the engines. I don't know.
Okay, because I was literally just about to ask. Like, okay, I can kind of see the boats, but what about the planes? Like, and I'm I mean that's a bit of a tough sell with the planes.
I agree.
With just being like out, like just in the air.
Just in the air,
yeah, you know, it's immediately up there in the sky. Immediately gonna start dissipating.
Right, and there's
you know?
Wind to come up.
Yeah, like dude, like no way.
Yeah, it's a little far fetched, but that's what some people, you know, came up with that way of explaining it, because who the hell, how can you explain some of these things, you know?
Right.
You're just maybe reaching. But.
Yeah, that's so, just it. You can't.
So there was another one that I thought could be believable. Okay. But, you know, so there is a substance called magnetite. And there are substantial magnetite deposits. And the most, it is the most magnetic natural substance the Earth has, and exists in the Bermuda Triangle region. And a lot of it exists in the Bermuda Triangle region, totaling an estimated 500 billion tons of this stuff. So this high concentration is hypothesized to act like a giant magnet, causing significant yet sometimes localized magnetic anomalies that interfere with compasses and navigational equipment, contributing to navigational errors. So I guess even as far back as Christopher Columbus in like 1492, there have been, you know, I guess there was a time when I think his compasses were not, you know, working well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that would make sense with both ships and aviation if it really is that strong. So I could really get behind that, you know, depending on what this, you know, mineral is. I actually never heard of this mineral, but, or a natural substance. I mean, I don't know if it is, but it kind of makes sense to me if that's what's.
Yeah, kind of, except like, Does it keep losing magnetism and then regaining it?
No idea.
Okay.
No idea.
Okay, because, well, I mean, like, the only thing is, like, I'm thinking is, like, magnets, like, you can't turn magnets on and off. You know what I mean?
You're right.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, but they can lose magnetism, so it's like, it would have to be a constant thing.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, every airplane ever would never be able to go over this.
Yeah.
Or like the you know, the FAA would just completely
just close
like,
off that yeah.
close off that area.
Yeah, you can't fly through it if like you had no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like my only like but, you know, with that theory.
Right, because like you said,
it makes sense,
the busiest
but like,
shipping lane
yeah.
in the world.
Yeah, like if there was that constant like power there, you know, it would just be dunking every single ship as it went by until, you know, it lost magnetism or whatever. So,
right,
I don't know, but then it would have to like regain it again somehow. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it can. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about the stuff, so.
Yeah, I didn't either. When I was reading about it, it was just very interesting. I could see it at least making things complicated. Like it didn't like I don't know if it was. I mean, it's strong. I don't know if it was strong enough to like actually, you know, magnetize the planes to go down. But it was enough to, like ruin their, you know, compasses, so they kind of get disoriented. And maybe an increased risk of crashing. But I don't know. That was just one of the things. And that's if you're like putting aside that you don't believe in supernatural, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Which I think there's a lot more to this earth than we know. So yep. I'd like to get into these stories.
So last but not least though, I think the devil did it. So you had a theory. I'm going to say the devil did it.
That would be nothing.
It is his triangle.
Exactly. The triangle belongs to him.
Like if it just got like, powered up and magnetic enough to just suck a plane out of the sky like into the ocean, that would be insane.
Oh man, I
highly doubt that one.
Yeah,
I would never fly again.
I never thought of that before. Like this, where else could this happen, you know?
Or at least never fly over water. So all right, but so let's get into some of the stories related to the Bermuda Triangle.
All right. So, the first story is Flight 19. Now, this happened in 1945, It's about a squadron that vanished into thin air. So Flight 19, this was December 5th on 1945, was a U.S. Navy training flight of five gunmen, TBM Avenger torpedo bombers that vanished over the Atlantic, becoming the incident that largely launched the modern Bermuda Triangle legend. So key details about this. The mission at 2:10 p.m., the squadron took off from the Naval Air Station, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on a routine navigation problem number one, led by Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor, who was an experienced pilot who had over 2,500 flight hours and combat experience. Also included 14 men who were a mix of Navy and Marines. They were to fly east for practice bombing, then north over the Bahamas and southwest back to base. The weather was mostly fair with some showers. So the crisis. After the bombing run, Taylor reported compass failures, both his and others. He became disoriented, mistakenly believing they were over the Florida Keys, and which they were actually over the Bahamas, heading out to sea instead of toward land. Radio transmissions grew confused, you know, saying, "We can't find west. Everything is wrong. Strange. We seem to be off course. It looks like we are entering white water." So in the final hours, by late afternoon, with fuel running low and darkness approaching, Taylor ordered the planes to stay together and prepare to ditch in the ocean. The last faint transmission was heard around between 6:20 and 7 p.m. No distress calls indicated any explosions or structural failure, just navigational bewilderment. That is so insane.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. Like what?
Especially with people like naval, Marines, yeah. Like they know their shit. Yeah, they know what they're doing.
These are guys who should know what they're doing. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. Unless he like had a stroke or something, but like.
But there's five different planes.
Yeah and they're all like experiencing the same thing.
They're all going like, we don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Right. So the aftermath, a massive search over 250,000 square miles found absolutely nothing. No wreckage, no bodies, no life rafts, oil slicks, anything. One of the two Martin PBM Mariner flying boats sent to search exploded shortly after takeoff, likely due to fuel vapors, killing its 13 crew. This brought the total loss to 27 men. Now, I will say that I read this somewhere else. They're under the assumption it exploded.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got that off of...
So we're both right.
Right. Yeah,
cool. I like that. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So
what I like they it when did that was, happens.
It says the disappearance of that particular airplane, the one that was out searching for everybody else, says the disappearance of that one is most often attributed to an explosion, as this particular model of plane was prone to such accidents. It says whatever the case may be, not a single trace of them has been found. Okay. So they're just
hold on. So this plane was known to just spontaneously combust
reason. That is, I got that off the U.S. Naval Institute website.
Okay. Fuck, that sucks. You get one of like those.
You might maybe say, okay, we're going to try another model here.
Right. Let's recall this one.
Can I get a different one that doesn't explode for no reason?
So they're just under the assumption that happened. Whereas me, like, I'd be under the assumption that the same thing happened to that one that the other five, like, if they all disappeared. I'd be like, yeah. That's what I would think.
Okay, first. These five planes disappeared, but that one probably exploded. In the same
exact they do area. That. So yeah. Apparently they do that. So, you know.
Yeah. That's exactly what it says off of the U.S.
It's 1945. We're not great at planes yet. Yeah. So.
So, very interesting. Oh, nice. I'm not done.
Nope.
The Navy's investigation blamed Taylor's disorientation after compass issues and the decision to fly east when he thought he was over the Gulf of Mexico. The official report was later changed to causes or reasons unknown to avoid blaming the naval leader. So no trace has ever been definitively found, fueling decades of mystery, though rational explanations center on human error, instrument failure, and bad weather. I mean, with five planes?
Yeah.
And this, the strange things he was saying, like when he says himself, like, everything is strange. Like, what does that
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, it's so, like, what do you mean strange?
This is
going
to bring me back yeah. to actually Hollow Earth.
Yep.
Because remember.
Of course it is.
Oh, because everything yeah.
always goes back to Hollow Earth. It's like the beginning and end of all.
But the reason why is because, so it's not the same thing, but very similar. So remember, there was reports of airplanes kind of being taken over, like where their stuff wasn't working, but they weren't crashing. Mm-hmm. Like it was almost like somebody seemed to be taking over their plane.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
Right, and that was over one of the poles? Is that over the North Pole or Antarctica? One of the poles.
Antarctica, I think, yeah.
Antarctica.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I couldn't
remember.
It doesn't matter. One of the poles.
One of the poles.
Santa Claus lives at the other one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, just making sure I got my poles right.
What about the Admiral? He was at the North Pole, though, right?
I think it was, actually.
You know what, he might have second been, yeah. thought,
yeah. Yeah, the Admiral was at the North Pole. But there has been several instances where people have, like, yeah, everything, it appeared is that they couldn't fly their plane because every, like, their gauges, you know, compasses, everything was going wacky, but they were flying appropriately.
Right, right.
But they were being led somewhere else. Like, something else was flying their plane. Whereas in this aspect, all their stuff is going wonky and they just disappear.
Yeah.
You know?
But didn't Admiral Byrd say something about seeing like World War II area or era planes? Like,
I think when he did. Flew through, yeah, you know what? I think he did
saw like other World War II airplanes.
Yeah, I think he did make a mention of that actually.
Oh, God. Now I'm going to have to re listen to our podcast.
Yeah, all these guys just went to the Hollow Earth. Like, they did, that's why they didn't crash and they couldn't find anything because they all went to the Hollow Earth. But there's gotta be another opening in that area.
I wanted to bring back that similarity. Mm-hmm. I needed to say it, especially because there was no, like, they're just assuming, you know, that one exploded and these ones just vanished, but they saw nothing, you know, just because they can't, you know, he says, you know, things are weird and, you know, I don't know where I'm at. Maybe something else was flying his plane, you know?
Yeah, and what is the white water? That's strange to me. You know?
Yeah, is this like, just like rough water, like white caps?
Yeah, something like just
what the hell are they talking about?
So the only thing that I'm going to say is
up the water?
I was watching something on the Bermuda Triangle before this, and they were interviewing, I think it was from the History Channel, and they were interviewing a guy, experienced pilot who frequently goes over the Bermuda Triangle. And he's like, I've been flying this. I've flown over it hundreds of times and I've had very weird things happen. Where, you know, his compass would stop moving or whatever. And they actually, during this show, he brought cameras up, and was like, hey, you know, this is an area where, you know, I've had weird things happen before. We're going to bring you up here. I have technology as maybe they would have had way back in the day. I have, you know, a compass. I have a backup GPS so that if something happens with that one, I can still fly safely. But when he got to a certain spot, it, you know, his compass started going. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't
just
use it.
Spinning around.
Right. No. But then also, he was like, wow, I can't even see. I can't see anything. It was like a white fog, what he described. So it wasn't like white water, but I almost wonder if it was just like a crazy, just fog where another thing to make them not know up or down, right and left, their directions, like they couldn't see anything. Like he was like, okay, I can't orient myself even up and down. I don't know where the ocean is, you know?
Yeah.
So they were going, you know, completely based on his backup GPS. And that was something that I just, you know, watched on the History Channel episode. But maybe that is something that happened to them, and that is how he described it, you know? Yeah.
And they just didn't have the fucking modern GPS to save their ass.
So, right. And that's what, and that's what this guy in the History Channel documentary said. She said, you know, if it was back in the day where I didn't have this backup, or if I was a less experienced pilot and wasn't prepared for something like this, I would be severely concerned about what's happening.
God, right, yeah, now. That's horrifying to think, like, you can't see shit and, like, you're just flying along, flying along.
Flying along, flying along.
All of a sudden, you just violently slam into the ocean. And you're like, what the fuck?
Because maybe you thought you were going straight.
Yeah, because you don't even know what direction you're going.
You have no idea.
You thought you were pulling up towards the sky because they're the same color. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's scary.
Or maybe it whites out because you end up in...
Oh. Yeah, and then you see a freaking pterodactyl fly next to you, like, and you're like, what the hell's going on?
And they don't want you to know where the entrance is. They white it out because they don't want you to know where the entrance is. You just show up there, you know?
Yeah.
Goddamn pterodactyl. All right, so Kyle, you want to take the next story?
Yeah, sure. This was cool. Going to be about the USS Cyclops, the largest non-combat Navy loss ever, which took place in 1918. Mm. So this is, this one's crazy because this ship is massive. It was a massive U.S. Navy coal ship that just vanished without a trace in March of 1918, resulting in, like I said, the largest non-combat loss in Navy history. So the ship launched, to start, the Cyclops, it was 542 feet long.
That's a big ship.
Massive.
Oh my God, that's like a football field and a half.
Yeah, that's a big ship.
That's huge.
It's a pretty big boat.
More than that. It's almost two football fields. More than that.
Almost, yeah. 50 feet shy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge.
Oh my God.
So it had 20,000 tons of coal in here, and it carried a crew of about 236.
That's a lot of seamen.
That's a lot of seamen.
Yep.
Plus there was passengers too. So you got just innocent bystanders just with all the seamen. So
much seamen.
So much. So many.
So we're talking like between 306 and 309 people. And that's, you know, with all the military and the seamen.
Yes.
The seamen and the civilians. I'm sorry. So this happened in January of 1918. They were taking coal to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, loaded up with 10,000, almost 11,000 tons of dense manganese ore, which was they needed for the wartime steel production.
Yeah, it's like World War One era.
Yeah.
That is World War One.
Yeah.
So it did an unscheduled stop in Barbados on March 3rd through the 4th because they had engine trouble, and she headed to Baltimore. This was on its way back, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's headed back to the U.S., yeah.
So her the final message that was received from anyone said, weather fair, all well, and then no further contact.
Not even an S.O.S.? Help us.
Nothing.
Just went.
So everything's fine.
Just signals, went completely dark.
No SOS. She was expected in Baltimore around March 13th, but never arrived. There was, like we just said, no distress calls, no wreckage, no oil slick, no bodies, debris, nothing.
That is so much to not find. I mean, I understand the ocean is huge. I understand that. But, like,
when
I
you go
know.
Out looking for it, I mean, how can you not find something floating along?
Well, I don't know. Ocean is so big. But what? How many days after that? When was their final contact?
Let's see. The
March 3rd or 4th.
Yeah, so it was almost 10 days.
That was 10. God, 10 days.
A lot can happen in 10 days.
A lot can happen in 10 days. And then you don't know where, you said between Barbados
and Baltimore.
Yeah. That's so much ocean.
Wow.
That's like that's like the worst vacation ever.
That Barbados is so much
Barbados
ocean.
In Baltimore. Like, it's fucking terrible.
Yeah, like it just
this cruise
like
line sucks.
You're just going human trafficking or something at that point.
I know, right? Come on, it'll be fun.
Barbados? Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm okay. Baltimore? Yeah, I'm okay. Sorry.
So, the Navy declared the ship lost on June 1st. So they were looking for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find anything. They ruled out a German U-boat attack. Germany denied involvement, but why would you admit it?
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't me.
I mean, they were at war. Like, if anything, you'd think they'd probably just be like, fuck you. Yeah, we blew up your boat. Piece of shit.
Probably.
Fucking American pieces of shit. Yeah, we blew up
take
your
full
boat.
Credit for that, asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. I kind of believe them, actually.
You're like, listen, as much as I would love to have sunk your fucking boat.
Yeah.
I actually didn't do it. I wish I did.
Wish I did. Wish
I
did.
I want to go find it just so I can sink
it. Yeah. We're going to freaking reclaim that boat, pull it up from the ocean, and then just sink it again.
Yeah.
Stupid American.
So there is a what people try to rationalize. Some of the explanations include it was just too overloaded with this heavy manganese
ore
that could turn like a slurry when it gets wet.
Ooh.
And could possibly, you know, mess up the integrity of the structure inside, but I don't know about that. Didn't they just drop? Didn't they drop off all of them, or did they drop off coal and then
they dropped off
pick up?
I think they dropped off something, some of it, but not all of it. Like, okay. I think the majority of their haul was going back. Like, they just stopped in Barbados because they had friggin' car trouble. So or boat trouble. I guess
they just wanted to, you know, party for a couple days.
Yeah, I guess. You know. They're like, oh yeah, we got to stop here. Sorry.
Let's go to this third world country and get drunk for a couple days. Yeah, I mean, exactly. They are sailors.
Yeah.
Kind of known for
buy
that.
This whole country for $20.
Sorry, seamen.
Seamen. Yeah, yes, exactly. They're not sailors. They're seamen. They're men of the sea.
So another theory is that there was a huge storm. There was a violent gale that hit the area somewhere around March 9th or 10th. And but that was just based on an unreliable sighting place near Virginia.
That's such a huge boat to be like a violent gale hit it and just, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's so huge to me. Like, it's a huge,
I feel like
heavy
you could
ship.
Take it.
Unless it was like top heavy, like all the ore, they didn't put like, they put all the ore on the top and it just bloop.
They just like built a pyramid like on the deck. And it's just like, all right, we got it, boys. Let's go.
Well, that's the crazy thing about like another thing is, you know, people have said mutiny or a sabotage.
That's pretty cool.
Or a rogue wave. But I just don't see a bunch of like Navy seamen
going down really? From something like that.
How would they sink it? Yeah.
It's not a fucking pirate ship.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Right, it had civilians on it. And say if it was a mutiny, I feel like the boat would still be around.
Yeah, maybe
a
lot of people would be dead on it. We own the boat now.
Right.
You know? That's the whole point.
Kill themselves.
It would become like a giant pirate ship.
And it wasn't even like a, like I'm sure they had weapons aboard, but it was more of a like a transfer.
Yeah,
ship. I mean, like it was meant for like shipping coal.
Yeah, it wasn't like a military vessel. Yeah, it wasn't a military vessel.
I mean, even if a bunch of freaking pirates came and boarded the ship would still be like,
you would have found the ship.
You would have
at
found
some
the
point
ship.
You would have found the ship.
Yeah,
and the thing that gets me because I know it says here we didn't get to that the wreck has never actually been definitively located. I feel like, 1918, technology is just not up to...
Not great.
Not great. You know, from Barbados to Baltimore, that is so much ocean. Like, the more I thought about it, it's like, oh, my God. That is a needle in a haystack. But, like, over 100 years has passed. I mean, I feel like a boat that's... I mean, the Titanic is still around. You know, a boat that's... almost two football fields long. Like, it, some random diver, I feel like somebody would see something. Like, in 100 years?
Well, that's what is...
I don't know.
Not sure.
That's what makes it so hard in that area of the ocean, is that, like, it goes, like, a couple miles deep. So, like, it's extremely hard to get to go down that deep. Like, yeah, only a few people ever have, you know?
Mm. Well, you need some, like, serious fucking shit to do that as well.
Call, not that you can anymore, fucking Stockton Rush with that Titan submersible.
Yeah, that that thing that didn't fucking work worth a damn. So weird thinking that, you know, something powered by a PlayStation controller would, not work and let you get crushed in the ocean.
Maybe there was some magnetizing thing that messed it up. We'll never know, you know?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. You don't know what's at the bottom of the ocean, man. Clearly, we haven't discovered anything.
We know more about the moon, so.
Yeah.
We know more about the moon than we do about the ocean.
We do, which is insane.
Which is fucked crazy, up to think about.
That is.
I mean, there's not a lot to the moon, you know, honestly, but still.
Jeez.
It's way further away.
Yeah. I just feel like over 100 years has passed. I mean,
Munster. Sorry.
I don't know. I mean, I know the ocean's huge. I just, like, nothing.
But I still think, like, you'd see something floating or something would wash up.
Or could we do, like, freaking, I don't know, some sort of sonar or something? I mean, maybe
nowadays I feel like you could have some sort of radar. You could try to ping,
like, way down and shit, possibly. Yeah. Like,
maybe it's too far down. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe the Kraken got it.
That's what I want to believe. Like, the most of all,
it's just a Kraken.
Out of all these stories, I wish there was a fucking giant Kraken down there, like, literally pulling planes out of the sky.
I just kind
of
want that to just be the answer.
What is a Kraken? Like, it's a giant, like, a sea octopus.
It's just like a giant.
It's like a gigantic octopus.
Like the one that could, like, pull down, like, a pirate ship. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, its head is as big as the ship. And, yeah. Like, that's got all of its tentacles and shit and just fuck shit up.
Hey,
Krakens are sweet.
I know.
Oh, shit. All right, so let's get into another extremely old one. So this is the Ellen Austin. And this took place in 1881. And it's the ghost ship that eats crews.
Malt. That's plural.
Yeah, plural. Yeah, plural. There were
multiple.
Multiple crews.
Oh, my God.
So, Ellen Austin is one of the most chilling classic Bermuda Triangle, Sargasso Sea ghost ship legends. So, the ship itself, the Ellen Austin was a large 210-foot, 1,800-ton American schooner, originally built in 1854 as the Meta and later renamed. That's bad luck. Don't do that.
Yeah, it's bad luck to rename a boat.
Yeah, you can't rename a ship. You're only allowed to rename a ship if whoever is the previous captain wants to take the name with him to his next vessel. That's the only time.
I actually never knew
that. That is the only time you're allowed to do it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a huge, huge thing with, like, I mean, even here on Lake Erie, like, nobody fucks with that.
Oh, yeah. Like, yes, I've always heard that. And, you know, the funny thing, when I read about, I'd known about that since I was a kid, but, like, mm-hmm. I watched that Netflix documentary, that Poop Cruise.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys seen that, but it's pretty entertaining. But they, you know, after the terrible, like, disaster that was, they cleaned up the freaking boat and they just, like, renamed it and they still use it. I'm like, how could you do that?
Oh.
Like, it says at the very end, like, on, like, it's written on the screen, like, The cruise has been renamed now after
the Cleveland Steamer.
After renovations, I forget what it was even called.
That's the only acceptable name. They better have renamed it to the Cleveland Steamer.
I know. They already, like, had a disaster with this boat. Then you're gonna, like, do, like, the worst, like, maritime, like, curse you could possibly do is rename your boat.
Self-inflicted curse.
Yeah.
They're like, there's not much worse than what we've already endured.
I mean, at one point, the ship was covered in shit, so how much worse do you think it could actually get? Like, come on. It'll be fine. Let's just roll them dice.
If the ship sinks, at least it'll be clean.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I read some stuff that people were like, no, it was fine. Like, we went on it, and like, yeah, there's like a little bit of a smell, but like, we had a great time. I'm like, no, I don't want to go on that cruise ship.
It's like, people better be paying you to go on that.
I know. Well, it better be like dirt cheap.
That doesn't mean fine. That's not what fine means. That's gross.
I know. I think all those people were like, sorry, here's vouchers for a free cruise. It's like, I'm not going on your shitty boat again.
You know what happened last time? Right. Shit. So in early 1881, under Captain A.J. Griffin, she was sailing from Liverpool, England to New York with immigrants and passengers. So while becalmed in the mid-Atlantic near the Sargasso Sea, the crew spotted a smaller, unnamed schooner drifting aimlessly. After observing it for 2 days with no response to signals, a boarding party investigated. They found the ship completely seaworthy, with cargo intact, food and supplies untouched, and no signs of violence or distress. Strangely, the captain's logbook and nameplate were missing.
Oh, come on!
That is odd.
That is weird.
That is weird.
Is it weird that the boat didn't have a name? Like, don't all boats like have a name?
I mean, it's not all of them, but it is. That's another bad luck thing to have a boat without a name.
Yeah.
So. But yeah. So Captain Griffin sent a salvage crew aboard to sail the derelict to New York alongside the Ellen Austin. A few days later, a storm separated the two ships. When the Ellen Austin caught up, the prize crew had vanished without a trace.
My God.
No struggle, no missing supplies, and the new log entries left by the salvage crew were gone.
God, that is weird.
So the records keep disappearing with the crew. In many versions of the legend, the captain sent a second prize crew aboard. The derelict and its new crew then disappeared completely in another fog or storm, never to be seen again.
So, okay, so the third time he lost a third crew.
Yeah, and the whole ship.
Or a second crew.
Yeah, well, yeah, his second crew.
His second crew.
The ship's third crew.
And the entire boat.
So, yeah, again, like, stop feeding this. Like, obviously something's very wrong. If you got missiles, shoot it. Just sink it into the ocean.
But if it's taking, like, the log, I feel it's smart.
I mean,
you know, if it's taking, like, the whatever.
I mean, something's going on.
The documents.
The fact that, like, both of them were missing is really fucking weird.
Yes, yeah. But that's intelligent to me.
Everything else was left. You know, it was like,
it's a literal ghost ship.
Yeah.
So, the Ellen Austin reportedly reached New York with a reduced crew, and the story first appeared in maritime folklore and was popularized in Bermuda Triangle books. While the ship existed and did encounter a derelict, some records support a basic version, the dramatic Eats Cruise details are considered heavily embellished or unverified legend by skeptics.
Okay, I don't think it should be embellished. They vanished, okay?
Yeah, they vanished.
Maybe Eats Crew, you know, is some way for a newspaper, a good newspaper headline.
Yeah, it's dramatic.
You know?
Yeah,
but the fact is, they disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, if that's not crazy, I don't know what is.
And literally, the skeptics aren't offering any contrary evidence. Right. They're literally just saying, no.
Like, yeah.
That's it.
It left, London or whatever?
Yeah.
With a certain amount of people. It arrived in New York with far less people.
Yes.
So, like, what the fuck happened to the people?
Yeah, what happened to the
other people?
Something
happened to the people.
Yeah, something happened to them. So.
Like, do they know where that schooner originated?
As far as I know, they don't. They came upon it.
Yeah, without any logbook and
and they just came upon
it. Without it even having a name, it's almost like untraceable.
I thought it did have a name.
No, not the schooner.
The The one that eats the people, like, didn't have a name.
The scooter didn't have a name. Is that Ellen Austin?
Oh, Ellen Austin.
Ellen Austin was the ship who made it to New York.
Oh, and so they, okay.
With so much less people.
You're right, the unnamed scooter.
It was weird. I mean, the show I was watching, The Curse of the Bermuda Triangle, the guy Chuck on it said something interesting, like, this would probably be brought up later, but I already started, so here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, in the case where some of the people about to say, like, extraterrestrial or, like, alien stuff, but, like, he put it like, if, okay, a bear, we track bears, right? So, like, if they come by, you're in a helicopter, you shoot this bear with a, you know, a dart, or knock him out, essentially, tag him.
Tranquilizer, yeah.
And then you fly off, you're gone. The bear wakes up and he's like, what the fuck just happened? You know? He has no idea what happened. I mean, it would be like the same in like an alien scenario.
That's like their version of getting roofied.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the thing is, like, people will say like pirates and shit too, but like, they're not taking anything. So
no.
They're not even taking the vessel. So
no. Not pirates. That's not what pirates do.
That's not what they do. They're not doing it just to kill people and steal a log.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
because they're not even stealing the food.
Yeah, everything
all the
like
food and stuff was there.
Untouched, and like there's no signs of struggle in all those like reports.
Yeah.
Weird.
I don't know. It's who's next? Amanda?
All right. I will be.
All right, cool.
Okay. So we're gonna go over Bruce Gernon's Electric Fog Time Warp. So this is 1970. There's a survivor who, quote, jumped through space-time. So Bruce Gernon's, quote, electronic fog time warp, this occurred in 1970, December 4th. It's one of the most famous survivor accounts in Bermuda Triangle lore, which involved a claimed space-time anomaly during a short flight that was had. Some details about this. So experienced pilot Bruce Gernon, who had over 600 hours of flight hours, his father and a business associate took off at 3 p.m. from the Bahamas in a Beechcraft Bonanza A-36. They were headed to West Palm Beach, Florida, which was about 250 miles away, which usually would take about an hour and a half.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So early on, in the flight, they encountered unusual clouds that grew very rapidly. They flew through a massive semicircular storm cloud resembling like a hurricane eye, and into a dark tunnel-like formation, which seemed about 10 miles long, and this was at 10,000 feet. The tunnel shrank rapidly, and they felt brief weightlessness and deceleration while flying. That's deceleration while flying. That is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you're just like,
oh, you scare yourself.
What the fuck?
Oh. So yeah, like as they're flying,
fly out of the sky right now,
right. So as they're flying and exiting this tunnel that they were flying through, they entered a dense, bright, gray, yellow, what they said was, quote, an electronic fog that clung to their plane. Visibility dropped to less than 2 miles. Instruments started failing, like their compass was spinning wildly and was not being able to be used. Radio only worked intermittently. So after 3 minutes in this fog, Miami controllers reported their plane on radar directly over Miami Beach, which was nearly 100 miles ahead of where it should have been.
This is where it gets really goofy.
That's
insane. Gernon visually confirmed the location. The total flight time was only 47 minutes, which was, you know, it was expected to be an hour, hour and a half, or even more than an hour, like 75 minutes to an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
with far less fuel consumed than normal. Aftermath being Gurnan landed safely with excess fuel. Onboard clocks matched the ground time. He had never heard of the Bermuda Triangle before this incident. He later coined the term, quote, electronic fog, and wrote books called The Fog and Beyond the Bermuda Triangle, theorizing it as a rare natural phenomenon involving electromagnetic effects, time compression, and spatial displacement. Skeptics attribute it to weather, instrument error, or misremembered times, but Gurnan's detailed, consistent firsthand account keeps it as a cornerstone of modern triangle mysteries. I hate skeptics sometimes. Like, so the weather made you go so much faster.
Super fast.
Or, yeah.
But also decelerate at the same time.
All right. Or no, you're just, they're gaslighting him. You're just misremembering it. Oh, yeah, exactly. You weren't there.
Yeah. It's like, no, here's all the logs. Like, here's all the stuff right here. Go fuck yourself.
I feel like one of the witnesses could be the Miami controllers.
Yeah. Yeah. They were the ones bringing them in.
They're like, dude, you're like right above the beach. So what the fuck?
Yeah, you're right above the beach.
You're not supposed to be here for like another, 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, they may not have known where they were coming from, but they're there when he was like, I just came from the Bahamas and it only took me this long. We could be like, well, I can 100%. Here's the, like, where he took off in the Bahamas can timestamp him. The Miami controllers can timestamp him.
Right. They're recording all that. And his fuel. He had excess fuel.
And his fuel. Like,
yeah. You can back this up very easily.
To me, this seems pretty easy to back up. Ways.
But then the skeptics are just like, no. Like, man, maybe it was the weather.
It doesn't seem possible, so you're
so
wrong.
So, no. Yeah, exactly.
We don't want to believe it, so we're not going to believe it, okay?
Because we're giant pussies and we're scared of stuff.
Yeah, I, whenever I hear that story, I think of fucking, like, Randy Quaid from Independence Day. Like, I'm back, you motherfuckers. What's he
talking about? He's talking shit to the aliens, like, right at the end.
Just, like, I'm just picturing him, like, wildly flying into, like, some vortex in the sky.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that because, like I said, this isn't the first time we've heard of, just
time dilation, that kind of thing.
And I think I'd heard that, he was getting nervous because it would look like some crazy storm was happening. He just thought it looks to be the safest route I can take now is going into the eye of the storm, because he said it appeared calm.
Storm always is. So,
right. Yeah. So, kind of like your first instinct. So he went right into it and whatever the hell it was. I don't know. Can't explain it.
Yeah.
To me, when I was reading that, it seemed like it just kind of appeared in front of him. Like, that's what it seemed like. It didn't seem like for me that he chose to go through there.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, it kind of just let him just right into it. Once he got out of that other tunnel. Whatever that was, it just kind of let him continue.
That's how I took it.
Yeah.
But these are, I would love to read that book.
Yeah, I know.
That he has.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, when I
what
see
was it called again?
The one was just called The Fog.
The one was just called The Fog.
Yeah, well, a little disappointing on the title there, but Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. That's probably the one to go to. That is a John Carpenter movie, yes.
Unrelated.
Completely, different than this. That one's about pirate ghosts. So, all right. So, Kyle, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Yeah, cool. I've heard about this one.
Oh, nice.
This was a vanishing of the boat called the Witchcraft, 1967, which was said to be an unsinkable yacht that vanished in a matter of minutes.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So this this guy, he lived in Miami, and it was around Christmas time. So I know that he went with he took his buddy who was a priest back to on the boat, because a lot of people did this apparently back then. But they would go off the coast to look at the Christmas lights on all the city buildings and stuff.
Mm.
So And they only went about 1 mile offshore. And by buoy number 7, as he said, was at a government cut, which was it's like a channel made for big cruise ships. Mm-hmm. They cut down into the ocean so to make a lane, basically, for all these huge boats.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, like Miami, you're going to have a lot of like cruise ships, like a lot of cruise ships go out of there and stuff, so.
So
nice.
Basically what that means is like there was very little chance of them running into anything.
Well, because yeah.
I mean, this has been like mechanically cleared out.
Yeah, they only went like a mile
out. You're only a mile out.
Yeah, you can see land. Like that's the whole point. Yeah. They were going out there to look at the land.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so and this guy was rich. He was like a club owner, which I don't know if you have that, but I can say it from what I had watched. He inherited like a hotel somewhere in Pennsylvania. And at one point, this hotel burnt down. So he ended up taking that insurance money, which it already sounds shady. he ended up taking this insurance money, moving down to Miami and opening up a nightclub.
Okay.
So he was like a man about town and had this nightclub and, you know, built up this like resort type thing, and he just sold all that stuff. And after 6 months, you know, he's just like, you know, get rid of it, and I'm just gonna have fun. Apparently,
yeah.
So
nice,
but that's just a little background on him. On this evening, he's out there with the priest, and he says he's radios the Coast Guard and says we've hit something. And we're not taking on water, but we need a tow. So he agreed to assistance and even agreed to fire off a flare in about 20 minutes to help them locate the boat. And there was no panic. There was no sign of serious distress. So the Coast Guard immediately jumped on it, and they were out there because it was so close.
Yeah.
Just 19 minutes after, and nothing was there. There was no boat, no debris.
Well, and the fact that they told them exactly where they were.
Yeah.
You know, right, it wasn't like the other 7. Boat.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to look. They could just take a straight shot out right to that there. Buoy.
Yeah, yeah, they know exactly where they are.
And obviously the boat's not moving. It would only move a little bit, you know, just with the flow of the waves.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, nothing was there. Nothing at all.
Wow.
So the extensive search over the following days covered thousands of square miles, which is just crazy because, I mean,
they were right there.
They were right there. Yeah. And the thing was supposed to be unsinkable, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a crazy one. But now, what I was watching, they interviewed somebody who had written a book about this mystery, and this person's theory, which kind of makes sense to me, is that he was never out there at all. That he, because you can radio into the Coast Guard from anywhere. Like, they don't know where you're radioing from. So he could have just done that at home. And then, they didn't say this, but my theory is that this dude was, like, involved with some shady shit. Like, some mafia stuff. You want to
fake his death?
Okay. Now, there was, like, a lot of mafia stuff in, like, Miami.
Yeah.
And, like, same there is in Pennsylvania, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, what happened to this dude in Pennsylvania? Why did he burn down his hotel? Did he burn it down?
No.
But then you're going to go to Miami, and, like, if you're going to get, you know, wrapped up in some nightlife, like, some mobster shit, and then now you have a hit on your head or something, you want to sell your business and just basically fake your death and get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, that is totally, like, that tracks.
Yeah.
It does.
The only thing is, like, the boat was gone, but that does not to say he didn't just sail it over to Mexico or something.
Yeah.
And, like, go from there.
Yeah, just kind of bail.
But also the priest, maybe they had a plan. Maybe he's like, no, I don't want to be a priest anymore. Yeah. Like, fuck this life. So who knows?
He is a priest in Miami.
The priest was gone. No one ever heard from the priest again.
We found out from Easter Crimes that priests aren't always good guys.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, he could be, you know, they could have both, you know, gotten themselves in some deep shit and was like, hey, you know what? we're better off faking our deaths and moving to anywhere.
Yeah,
anywhere else.
Here, yeah. Yeah.
Because it's just so strange that nothing was ever found. I mean, it was so quick that they
especially
got out
if it's
there.
If it's just in that little channel, like if it sunk, they would have been able to find it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, like because the channel not super
or
deep.
Parts of it.
Yeah,
it's not it's super. Like, deep. It's not super deep. It's like, deep enough found that a cruise ship can go through it, but it doesn't. It's not 2 miles deep.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like you're not. You're not gonna be like, oh, well, this wreckage is abandoned. We can't go after it. It's too dangerous. Like, no, it's probably
no. A diver can probably get to that ocean floor.
Yeah,
from there.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
like complete visibility.
Or mm-hmm. for that's where you can use sonar.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, we can't tell what this is, but there is something big that is down on the ocean, you know, on the floor, the sea floor. Yeah, that is weird, but I definitely, if that's a theory that they were never out there at all, I can buy that one. I can.
Yeah, I could.
I mean, it would make sense given the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, so
my name your boat, which is kind of right? weird.
Like, it's kind of weird. Kind of like asking for it.
I know.
All right, so let's go to another goofily named boat. So we're going to talk about the SS Cotopaxi. So this is the ship that sank but kept calling for help. So this took place in 1925. It's a classic Bermuda Triangle disappearance and was actually later solved by a wreck discovery. This is I think the only story I have where they actually found wreckage. So,
okay, cool.
So the ship was a 2351 GRT American steam powered coal freighter that was built in 1919. It carried a crew of 32 men under Captain William J. Meyer. On November 29th, 1925, it departed Charleston, South Carolina, bound for Havana, Cuba, with 3,800 to 4,200 tons of coal. The ship had known issues with worn hatch covers, and apparently they had new ones, but they left them behind on the dock because they're dumb. So,
come on.
So the distress calls. On December 1st, during a tropical storm, the ship radioed Jacksonville, Florida. At 7:15 p.m., reported listing badly and taking on water. And at 7:25 p.m., conditions were worse. No exact position was given and no formal SOS was sent. These were the final transmissions. So the ship and all 32 crew members, seamen, had vanished. extensive searches found no trace, leading to its listing as overdue and its place in Bermuda Triangle lore. So in 2020, though, marine explorer Michael Barnett identified a wreck known as the Bear Wreck, 35 nautical miles off St. Augustine, Florida, and it was identified as the Cotopaxi. So the evidence included matching dimensions, boiler layout, valve markings, and proximity to the distress signals. The ship likely foundered due to the storm, poor hatch covers, and shifting cargo in heavy seas. And while the legend portrayed a total mysterious vanishing with ghost ship rumors, the reality was a tragic but explainable sinking due to bad weather.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. So they're not all Hollow Earth or ghosts or aliens or devils or you know.
You never know. Okay.
It could have been all. Yeah, you know.
It's Kraken.
It still could have been the Kraken, I guess.
Or Alaska. Did you hear about what the Alaska is?
I don't think so.
This was on the show I was watching. This is one of the like sea monster explanations. I don't
know. So an Alaska is a sea monster?
It's not Alaska.
It's just
Alaska.
It's Luska.
Yeah,
Luska. Okay, so it's just called
It's basically like Luska. The head of a great white, but like the body of like an octopus.
What?
It's like a squid bear.
Yeah, it's very similar to a squid bear. It is
okay.
the lower half is an octopus, and then it just has a shark's head. So
what the fuck?
Some like the islander, smaller islander people.
Are we
believe.
Sure? Like this wasn't an Egyptian god that somebody had got mistaken with and threw in here? Like the
it
fuck?
Sounds like. Actually, I think there is a Sharknado movie with possibly one of these in there. I think they call it a Sharktopus. I have watched this movie.
So and stupid.
It's something. It's something.
Yeah. It's fucking amazing, though.
Sharktopus. Yeah.
So, okay. So it's like a squid bear, but a shark. Yeah. Okay. So that's the explanation, though. Is that
for
like
some of
one
some,
of those
some of the more smaller village people on these islands do truly believe in this creature.
Okay.
So that creature to me is like the equivalent of sheep squatch.
Yeah, I know.
It's like the ocean's equivalent to sheep squatch. Yeah.
Yes. 75 to 200 feet long.
Wow. Oh, jeez. All right. My up.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, let's just say I am. Fuck it. All right, so next we're going to talk about Star Tiger and Star Ariel, which twin plane vanishings that took place 1948 to 1949. So they were two separate disappearances of British South American Airways Avro Tudor 4 passenger planes that helped cement the Bermuda Triangle legend. So the Star Tiger, which took place on January 30th, 1948. So the Avro Tudor 4 departed Santa Maria at 3:34 p.m. on January 29th.
The Azores, that's like that's a really nice island. I guess somebody had told me it's almost like the Hawaii of Europe.
Okay.
Type of thing.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I knew a girl who just went there.
Oh, nice. So it was bound for Bermuda, which is a 1,900-mile leg with 25 passengers and 6 seamen, including World War II hero Air Marshal Sir Arthur Cunningham. So the flight faced strong headwinds and flew unusually low, less than 2,000 feet. It's not like they were trying to stay off somebody's radar. But whatever. Yeah. It made routine position reports, and at 3:15 a.m., Bermuda received its last message when it was 340 miles south, northeast, I mean. Radio contact was lost shortly after, no distress call, the plane simply vanished. So there was a massive effort. 26 aircraft and ships over 5 days found absolutely nothing. No wreckage, debris, or oil slick. So as far as the Star Ariel, that took place on January 17th, 1949. It was a Avro Tudor 4. It left Bermuda at 8:41 a.m. for Kingston, Jamaica. Had 13 passengers and 7 crew. The weather was excellent, and the pilot, Captain John Clutha McPhee, chose high altitude, 18,000 feet. So 1 hour out, the crew reported their position and good visibility at 9:37 to 9:42 a.m. and then switched frequencies. No further messages. The plane vanished without a trace or distress signal.
Wow.
Extensive multinational operation for the search. There's dozens of planes and ships, including U.S. Navy carriers. But like the rest of them, they found zero evidence. So both of these incidents remain officially unsolved. The UA inquiry for Star Tiger famously concluded, "What happened will never be known." Possible explanations include mechanical failure, faulty heaters causing fires. I guess that was kind of a thing for that model of plane. Another one that spontaneously combusts for no fucking reason. But fuel exhaustion or a controlled flight into the sea, but no wreckage ever surfaced. These back-to-back losses of the same aircraft type in the same region amplified Bermuda Triangle speculation.
That's a...
It's
kind of
weird.
Story.
Like 1 year after the other, the same exact plane with almost the same name.
Wow.
They're like twin planes.
Yep. All right. Who's next?
Well, I mean, and this is not a Bermuda Triangle story, but like things like this, they're just, to me, it's not a coincidence. I mean, you remember recently or that Malaysia flight.
Yeah.
You know, and that was.
It just vanished.
It just freaking vanished. And how many people were on it? I mean, it was a huge plane.
Yeah, it was a big plane. There's probably like 250.
227.
That was close.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Total was 239.
That was close.
It was 227 passengers plus
and
their crew.
And then the crew. Yeah, that was close. I'm going to count that as a win.
There was...
Didn't they find some debris from that, though? I thought I read that.
Did they?
It was like way after.
If they might have, I don't know.
It took them a long fucking time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it did.
If they did, I'll have to look into it. I just remember that it just... can you imagine just like, you know that whole families were on there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean? Just like, but just to have something just vanish with just zero answers, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think they, like, I don't know that, I didn't recall them having any distress signals. I think they vanished.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they're just gone.
I don't know, but this just reminded me of the Malaysia flights.
Nice. All right.
Okay. So the next one is, it's called the near miss that vanished. So this was just it says DC-3 flight. Go up a little bit.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, go up. It just says NC. 16002. So that was just the flight name, I think. This was in 1948. The near miss that vanished is one of the most eerie Bermuda Triangle cases because it happened so close to a safe landing. Oh, yikes. Okay. So details. So this was December 28th of 1948. During early morning hours, the aircraft was a DC-3. There was 29 passengers plus three crew. Captain Robert Lindquist was the pilot, co-pilot Ernest Hill, and stewardess Mary Burke. It was just a routine scheduled flight from San Juan, Puerto Rico to Miami. The plane had departed the previous evening and flew through the night. At approximately 4:13 a.m., the captain radioed Miami Approach Control with a calm, routine transmission. We are approaching the field, 50 miles south of Miami. We can see the lights of Miami. All's well. Standing by for landing instructions. Oh, my God. They're right there.
They almost made it. They almost made it.
So this place, so the plane was very close to landing, almost within visual range of the airport. They said they saw the lights. Mm-hmm. Seconds later, radio contact was lost. No distress call, no emergency signals, nothing. Despite extensive search by U.S. Coast Guard and Navy, no wreckage, no debris, no oil slick or bodies were ever found. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that is crazy.
The aircraft has had known issues with its batteries, low charge before departure, which may have contributed to eventual electrical failure. Why would they let that plane fly?
I know.
There's something wrong with every plane.
Right.
Every plane you've ever been on, there's something wrong with it.
Right.
There's stuff that they're allowed to let slide in the pre-check, just so you know.
I'm sure there is.
Every plane has something wrong with it.
The Civil Aeronautics Board investigation could not determine a probable cause. This case remains officially unsolved. This disappearance stands out because it occurred in good weather, on well-traveled route, literally within sight of safety. Yet the plane and everyone aboard vanished without a trace.
Yeah, how the hell?
You would think there would be
the fuck?
Something. Like just a piece of metal. Just something. Because it was right there. It was so close. And they don't know. So the last time they heard from them was 50 miles. So they were probably less than
closer,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like if they're already talking to the control, they can see where they stop. I mean, I'm sure that the search had a pretty generalized idea of where they might be, right?
They had to have been. Yeah.
Wow.
That's yeah, that's a rough one. Yep. All right. Well, speaking of wacky wild stuff,
I'll take this next one. Sure. I did not hear about this one, so this will be interesting. This is a Great Isaac Lighthouse Keepers, 1969, and it is a land-based Bermuda Triangle mystery. So it's a it's one of the rare instances of some weird shit happening on land rather than out at sea. So August 4th, 1969, at the location of Great Isaac K. Or is that pronounced E?
No, it's K. Okay. No, it's a K. Yeah, it's also, it's like a cove, kind of. Gotcha. It's like a K.
A small, barren, razor-sharp, rocky inlet islet in the Bahamas. About 18 to 20 miles north of Bimini. The 152-foot tall lighthouse was built in 1859 to warn ships away from the dangerous reef. So the keepers were two Bahamian lighthouse keepers, Ivan Major and B. Mollings. So the routine radio calls to the lighthouse went unanswered. A passing ship reportedly noted the light was out. So a launch was sent from Bimini, and searchers found that the station was intact in good order. Meals were prepared, but uneaten in some accounts. And personal belongings in the small dinghy were still there. There was no signs of struggle or distress.
Small dinghy.
Quit playing with your dinghy.
Quit playing with your dinghy. Job, lady. There's your big fat whale in your boat. So no signs of any distress or anything like that. And the lighthouse had been operating normally just until recently. So this sounds like these guys disappeared.
I was going to say, they could probably tell by the food. Like,
yeah, how fresh it was. How fresh was it? I don't know. It doesn't say, but no distress signals were ever sent. The two men simply vanished without a trace. And the extensive searches, they never found any bodies or any evidence at all.
That's what is so crazy to me, mm-hmm. that all the Bermuda Triangle one are just vanishing.
Just gone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Just gone. It's all gone.
And like they would, I'm sure they would have like on record be like, if there was any like massive storms or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like that happened, like maybe some rogue wave came up and like just washed them away. But you think they would mess up the quarter or whatever.
Right.
You know? And like there'd be, at least be evidence that like something happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as up to this day, the case remains officially unsolved. Bermuda Triangle enthusiasts cite it as proof of mysterious forces, but skeptics do point to Hurricane Anna, which happened August 1st through 2nd. Okay. So that's like we were just talking about, but
yeah,
it did pass by and it could have produced dangerous waves or conditions on the exposed rock, possibly sweeping the keepers away.
So maybe if they were just outside at the time.
Yeah, maybe they were trying to like square some stuff up outside. But I mean, if it was that bad out, like go inside.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be like, what are you doing out there?
Or at least finish your food. It looks like their food was like half eaten, or maybe something was. Well, did it say it was half eaten, or did it say?
No, it just said it was just like sitting there. Yeah, just left out pretty much.
Maybe
like there was a meal prepared, but
yeah, because I was going to say normally, like maybe that shows me that they had to run outside real quickly for something. Like maybe something was, you know, breaking, or you know, they were eating. The big wave just did this. Let's go down there and fix it. Yeah. And they got, you know. I don't know.
Oh, I fucked up the dinghy.
Because if you leave your food out, that shows me that something called you away.
Something important happened.
Something interrupted you.
Grab your surfboard, dude. Look at those fucking waves, man. Famous last words.
Yeah, I know, right? There was actually a third.
Fucking gnarly, yeah, dude.
There was actually a third lighthouse keeper. His name was Jeff Spicoli.
Yeah.
And he took them all surfing, and that's when they vanished.
I'm going to ride that wave over to England and jam with the stones.
All I need is some tasty waves, bro.
I think in another life, you were that. Yeah, voice was so spot on.
Nice.
For like a surfer dude.
In a past life, yeah. It was Kelly Slater. I do love the boogie board. So, I mean, that makes sense. Never got the chance to really surf, but I did master that. So, I don't know.
One day.
Yeah, one day. Maybe.
So after the incident, though, the lighthouse was automated and no longer required keepers.
Oh, that's lame, dude.
I know. You got to have some, like, you know, creepy old crazy lighthouse keepers, yeah, like, chilling about on a small island.
There's, like, a small part of me that, like, always kind of wanted to do that. You know, just, like, cool. Chill out and, like... Just make
really,
sure,
really well
just,
paid.
Yeah, just make sure that like it's working and shit, and like
you do it for like a summer.
Then you just hang in Cleveland.
Out. Yeah, I know.
From the rain, or yeah, I don't know if they have somebody.
I should see if I could become a lighthouse keeper. That'd be cool.
You start smoking a corn cob.
Yeah, like, exactly. I need to like grow like a full beard and like get like a little like, you know, a little hat and shit. Yeah,
you just turn into Willem Dafoe from the lighthouse.
Oh, I'd be a little like Morse code, like suck my dick or something like that. You know,
pee pee poo poo.
Yeah, exactly.
You would do something completely like just blow obnoxious.
Me. Like, yeah.
I'm not German.
Or just put like shit like over the light so I could like flash different like.
Do hand signals and stuff.
do like a puppet show on the break wall or something like that.
What is he trying to tell us?
You'd get like a laser pointer and point it at the ships.
There we go.
Yeah.
What the fuck? That'd be awesome. Oh man. All right. So we got one more story here. So the Marine Sulfur Queen took place in 1963, and the story is called The Floating Bomb That Dissolved.
Oh, boy.
So this is a notorious Bermuda Triangle-associated disappearance involving a highly volatile cargo ship. So the ship itself was a converted World War II-era T-2 tanker, originally the SO New Haven. 504 feet long, and it was repurposed in 1960 to 1961.
They changed the name of it.
I guess so. Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Dun dun yeah. dun.
Bum, yeah. Bum, bum. Yeah, you guys are fucked. Hate to say you had it coming, but kind of had it coming. So it was used to carry molten sulfur at high temperatures. The conversion was rushed and criticized. The ship was called a garbage can by some due to structural weaknesses. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a sharp job.
And it's literally holding like molten.
Yeah. Sulfur. Molten sulfur.
Why couldn't you like wait to like molten it?
Yeah.
Until it gets off the boat.
Maybe throw a couple more rivets in there or something. Like, I don't know, dude.
And is that just like a giant, like sulfur smells like rotten eggs?
Yeah, it
right?
smells so like
it's
hell.
Like, you're just like, it just smells terrible within like 2 miles of this ship.
Did they like draw the straws ocean? And the shortest straw like had to be on this boat?
Yeah, this ship was a punishment.
These people disappeared themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? They're like, fuck yeah, this.
Right on another shit ship.
Oh, God. So it departed Beaumont, Texas on February 2nd, 1963, bound for Norfolk, Virginia, with 15,260 tons of molten sulfur and a crew of 39 men. So it was last contacted on February 4th at 1:25 a.m. A crew member sent a routine personnel radio message. A personal radio message, I guess, about stock trades. So it was approximately 25 degrees, 45 north, 86 degrees, 00 west. It was roughly 200 to 270 miles west of the Florida Keys and the Gulf of America. No distress call was ever sent.
The Gulf of America.
It came up again. I was like, I can't resist. I gotta take it.
It is, first of all, it's crazy to me that they had those exact coordinates.
Yeah. And they still.
Nothing. Can't find anything.
Nope.
Like, they're like, we legit have the exact coordinates.
Oh, we know exactly where it is. Okay, so you found it. No.
No.
Yeah.
Did you smell it?
Yeah, could you smell it?
Did you really fucking smell it?
Could you smell it? So the ship was reported overdue on February 7th. Extensive searches found only scattered debris.
Okay, so this is what they found.
Yeah, they found a little bit of stuff. Life jackets, life rings, a shattered name board, which said the Irene Sulf. So, yeah, it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And a few other items. No bodies, however, though. No major wreckage and no oil slick consistent with a massive spill. The Coast Guard investigation concluded the ship likely broke apart or exploded due to the dangerous cargo. Molten sulfur is extremely hot and could produce explosive gases. Combine that with the vessel's poor structural condition and rough seas. The exact cause remains undetermined because no main wreckage was ever located.
Yeah, of all the things listed with this ship, was nothing would get me on that boat.
Yeah. Though often listed in Bermuda Triangle lore, the disappearance actually occurred in the Gulf of America, well, outside the classic triangle boundaries. The case stands out for the near total vanishing of a large ship and its crew, despite leaving some identifiable debris.
I mean, at least they, I don't want to say at least they found some things, but yeah, I mean. Yeah.
You didn't find like the main thing though.
Right. I mean, what is
even that stuff too? It's like, are you 1,000% sure that it came from that ship?
Yeah. And what do you? This is me being ignorant. What do you use? Like molten.
Oh, molten sulfur for?
Like is that like a high commodity? Is that something people would pirate, or is that just like no, this shit just burned up?
No, I don't see a lot of pirate use for it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I mean,
I don't even know what you do with it.
I mean, just used in like fabrication.
Make stink bombs.
Yeah, you make stink bombs out of it. So, but yeah, just like different. Like,
people tag so you could be like, make buy a dollar store fucking stink bomb.
Like, break it in the high school bathroom to piss off the assistant principal. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. All right. So let's get to the party pooper section here.
Party pooper.
So the reality. Unfortunately, there is no scientific evidence that the Bermuda Triangle is any more dangerous than other heavily trafficked ocean areas. But here's why the mystery doesn't hold up well. The region actually has extremely busy maritime and air traffic, so more incidents are statistically expected. Yeah, you know, more stuff traveling through, more stuff probably going to go wrong.
That actually surprises me. Like, why would, I mean, it is a big area.
It's a big area.
It is a big area.
But I mean, it's like there's a lot of, there's so many like trade routes and like different shit like that. So
it is. It takes up a lot.
Yeah. Many reported mysterious disappearances had ordinary explanations. Storms, mechanical failure, human error, or simply bad record keeping.
Okay, you can't call it bad record keeping because someone stole the logbooks.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Ghost ship.
That is a fucking
good point. That's not considered bad record keeping. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no logbook.
I think that's stupid because a lot of the ones that we talked about today, they were like, you know, it was good weather.
Yeah.
Or... yeah,
the record keeping was actually good.
If you can't find them, it's easy to say, oh, it was human error. Stop gaslighting these fucking people. They disappeared, all right?
Yeah, and about the, what do you call it? The Vial Vortex one where the guy flew through the time warp or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
You got the people from his takeoff location his arrival location and himself.
Yeah.
All reporting that everything lines up.
You're telling me everybody fucked up their records?
Everyone fucked up or like, they're just lying. Like,
get out of here, dude. No fucking way.
Or all five planes with the Naval and the Marines in Flight 19.
Yeah.
They all
fucked up.
They all fucked up. Not one of them got through.
Yeah.
Or not, you know. And nobody's calling, you know, SOS is over here, distress signals on any of these. No. They're all like, we're fine. And then all of a sudden, they're not.
They're just gone.
Then they're just gone.
No. Oh, man. So the U.S. Coast Guard, the Navy, and insurance companies do not recognize it as a special danger zone also. Lloyd's of London, which is a big maritime insurer, has said the area has a normal loss rate. So there are some natural explanations, which include violent weather, you know, sudden storms, rogue waves in the Gulf Stream. Here's another one, I guess, the gas. Yeah, the ocean farts.
The farts.
Yeah, the ocean farting theory.
Yeah, the ocean farts. Compass variation. The area has a large magnetic anomaly where true north and magnetic north align closely, which confused older navigators. And then human factors. The region is prone to hurricanes and was especially dangerous before modern GPS and satellite communication.
So here's another thing I want to question, and I know we don't have the answer now, but you know how they said insurance companies say that the, what did they say? Like,
yeah,
the
loss. They said it was normal.
It was a normal loss? Yes. Okay, yeah. So.
Yeah, the Lloyd's of London insurance company.
But I want to know, when you say normal loss, how about things that just disappear?
Right, without a trace.
Yeah, is that normal?
Is that, you know, I want to know that. Like, okay, see, I understand, like, there's accidents and loss in many other places, but how about, let's talk about disappearances.
Yeah, they probably don't honor the claim. If I'm thinking about
you're
it.
You're right.
Like, they probably don't honor the claim. Like, if I went to, like, State Farm and was like, my car was stolen, you know, or, like, whatever, and just told them, like, yeah, it's gone, like you'd just be like, no, don't do an investigation or anything. Like, it's just, it's gone. There's no evidence of anything, but it's just vanished. It's like, okay, they're not going to really just take your word for that type of shit.
It vanished?
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I want to know. I want to know specifically about no trace, you know, like these people have no trace, no SOS signals, complete disappearance. That's the statistic I want to see.
Right, yeah. Like the plane that vanished less than 50 miles from the landing strip over the ocean.
Yeah. Right.
What happened there? Yeah. As far as that goes, I don't know. Only thing I do know about Lloyd's of London is that apparently they lost their ass big time by insurance, by insuring a bunch of professional wrestlers.
Oh, really?
And then when they had like career ending injuries, like they had to get these like massive payouts and they stopped insuring them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because they like went in, it's like, well, like how much risk could a fake, you know, fake fighting have, but like people actually get fucked up doing it. So, you know, a lot of people had career ending shit and just, you know, they ended up losing a whole bunch of money on it.
Yeah.
Cause they're dumb.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell they're really, you know, taking hits and falling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so, that is the Bermuda Triangle. So, I mean, we've been spitballing theories, I feel like, all night with this, but after all the stories and everything, I don't know, do you guys have any final theories on what's going on there? Or if anything at all is actually going on?
I think there's something to this, to be honest with you.
Okay.
There's just too many weird things. There's too many, similar... like stories about like the compass is not working. Like something is weird about this area, I think. And I really wish it was a giant Kraken that was like sinking ships. I doubt it.
That'd be pretty awesome.
But something's up with it.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Whether it's natural or supernatural, I don't know, but I could be, I'm open-minded to both.
Right.
I'm open-minded to both theories because I do think that something is, you know, something is weird. The thing is, between, like, for conspiracy theories, there's always a little truth with conspiracy theories. Like, why would, you know,
the good clearly, ones there is.
Huh?
The good ones there is. Yeah.
Right. And because there's truth to them, you know, maybe not all of it, but obviously, you know, something, the reason why this came about is because people were noticing weird shit happening. You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, and there's, you know, even we didn't touch on it, but there's a Bimini Road that it's something in the Bermuda Triangle off the Bahamas. It's literally, you know, what some people could theorize is like this. It looks like an underwater street.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We're just looking at pictures of it.
It's like a linear, where, I guess it's like just a line of these carved out stones. They all look exactly the same.
No.
Like I said, they're in a linear pattern.
They're replaced.
Yeah. This was not Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Right. And this was this is, you know, I mean, it's in the Bermuda Triangle. This isn't saying that this specific spot is deadly, but this is where some people theorize, like, hey, this could be, is this the Atlantis, you know?
Yeah.
You know, is this, like, it was in Ancient Apocalypse, that docuseries that I was telling you about, I think, yeah, last podcast. You know, so it's very interesting. So really, the only reason why I bring that up is because there's a lot of mystery behind this area, you know, like disappearances, but also this area here, like, what the hell was it? Was this place always underwater?
Yeah.
You know,
and that reminds me of what I was telling you guys about beforehand too, was on that Curse of Bermuda Triangle show I was watching. They found one location off the, like, Florida Keys, and then off of one of the islands in Bermuda, not far even from the shore, but a 45 foot by 45 foot square dug into the ocean floor 30 feet deep, like, in two locations hundreds and hundreds of miles apart. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Like, and that is surely not natural. So why is it there?
But skeptics will say, oh, it's natural.
It's natural.
Yeah. They just gaslight you.
Yeah. No, you're stupid.
Yeah, it was definitely not natural, but, like, I wish they could have explained it more, because they basically were like, we don't know what this is. Mm-hmm. Weird as fuck, though.
Yeah.
But, like, was it a part of some mining operation? Like, but I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah. What I noticed is that a lot of the ones that I know there's lots of stories. The ones that we talked about a lot were older ones, for the most part. What was it?
Yeah.
Maybe, like, the probably the most recent one was like in the 70s.
Yeah, I think.
Probably the yacht one. No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And,
yeah, I was pulling a lot of old shit when, I was doing research. Yeah.
Yeah. They were all really, you know, it was all really good stuff, but I think there's something to it. I do. Like I said, whether it's natural or supernatural, I don't know, but I'm open to both theories. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what do you think?
I'm actually going to split the difference on this one, just because of the mass amount of events that happen. I'm going to say that probably there's a good amount of them that just occurred due to bad weather, bad decision making, that kind of shit. But there's a possibility that a lot of them occurred because of something else.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, I'm kind of like half and half. I don't think all of it was either caused by one thing or the other. I think it was a combination of, like, a lot of things.
And I think the thing that we'll never know is because we have not explored so much of our ocean.
Yeah.
Like what you were saying, we know more about our moon than our own oceans. That, I mean, that's huge. Like, how can we say either way? What we don't know.
We don't even know what is in there.
Yeah. So, and, like, you know, dead men tell no tales. So, like, who knows about some of the shit that even happens out there? Like, what if, you know, like, there's like giant like maelstrom, like in like freaking the Little Mermaid, you know, like opens up into like a like water tornado that like a ship just gets
just
sucked
like
down
a
into it.
Pull and yeah, fucking just gets sucked in there, like,
and they're just gone. Like you know, they can't.
Like you can't
no one
do
can
anything.
Tell that because they're dead.
Yeah,
they're never going to be found. And which would I mean explain like there with no oil slicks, no wreckage or anything. It's just sucked into the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're hanging out with like flounder and like that little crab guy and Jamaican shit, crab like that. Like
Sebastian.
Yeah, Sebastian. That's it. Yeah,
Ursula comes over.
Ursula like, comes in. Here. Like. But yeah, so thanks for hanging out with us tonight, guys. Appreciate it. Was there any other stories that we didn't cover tonight based on the Bermuda Triangle that you were hoping we would? Let us know down in the comments. And I suppose until next time, I'm Kevin.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
Peace out.
Bye.
Adios.